And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Very excited to bring Gary Danielson back. It is time for our weekly chat, and we've got some Alabama to talk about. We've also got a party between Florida and Georgia that we will break down. Gary says expect a very Florida-Georgia game. We will explain what that means, as well as a look at LSU, Ole Miss, and Auburn, and the ever-changing SEC West. Make sure that you are subscribed on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher so that you can get the SEC on CBS podcast first. And enjoy Gary Danielson. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, Gary Danielson joins me, as he does every single week. Gary, we appreciate all of these visits, but boy, we've got a fun time in the SEC schedule. We've got that long streak. We got through with Tennessee. We got the Alabama-Texas A&M game, and then in the very near future, Gary, it will be Saturday night in Tiger Stadium. But before then, it will be Florida and Georgia. A wonderful event. You made even reference to our changing ways of calling this. It's still the cocktail party, right, Gary?
Now, there's only one guy that can call it by the real name right now, and that's because nothing can happen to him. The rest of us just call it Florida-Georgia.
Florida, all right, the Florida-Georgia, that's right. Now, before we get to that, I want to look back at Alabama and Texas A&M. A 33-14 Alabama victory, a game where, Gary, Texas A&M led deeper in this game than any other Alabama opponent, and still, as they had that 14-13 lead, you felt, based on the stat sheet, based on the way things had played out, and based on the dominance that Texas A&M, or the dominance that Alabama had established up front defensively against Texas A&M, it was hard to see the Aggies coming out as the eventual victors here. What'd you take away from Alabama's performance against an undefeated top 10 opponent?
Right. I actually felt that A&M hung in the game reasonably well because Alabama was so poor in the red zone. For whatever reason, I don't know, there were just some odd pacing, yeah, some odd play calling by Alabama. It never really felt to me that A&M could slow the run game down, but you know, there just didn't seem to be the discipline and play calling that needed to be to put the game away. And you know, I kind of thought when A&M scored that to make it 14-13, but for the first time of this all year, we might see. I know Ole Miss, but that was slightly different because of the way they scored at the end of the half. But there's a lot more pressure at home, knowing you're supposed to win a game, than sometimes you know people realize. So I think you know the way they played. The one thing that is a constant about Alabama is they answer the bell. Mm. When things get uncomfortable, they don't. And that's really a testament to a team that's won a lot of championships and have been in the hunt. You know, since Nick Saban has been the coach at Alabama, don't count 2007 because he was building the team. You know, but since 2008, they've only played three games that have not had national championship implications, and that was in 2010. So, you know, I mean, this team has been into the grinder for years now, and they just seem to be comfortable with it. Here's again what I believe about Alabama. I talked about it in the open. First of all, no game plan. Nothing's worth anything if you can't handle the trenches against them. And that's why when we get to LSU, it's an intriguing matchup. But after that, then you have to be highly efficient, and you can't have an alarming weakness, because we've talked about how Alabama can take advantage of your weakness. The weakest part of A&M's football team was their three interior linemen. They had a true freshman playing left guard that had to match up against, you know, an NFL player in Allen. They had a redshirt freshman playing center who had Deron Payne on him all game, a 320-pound freak nose tackle. And at right guard, they had a true sophomore that had his hands full all day with whoever Alabama put there. So that just exposed them. There was no help for it. They couldn't pass protect. The center could barely snap the ball, and it was amazing that they were in the football game. Trevor Knight really had no chance to set up in the pocket. And, you know, they even had to take out their best running back, Williams, because they had to bring in a little bit more bulk at running back to help with the pass rush. So that's what Alabama does. If you have a weakness, they're the one team that can morph themselves and make you pay for that.
Jonathan Allen telling Ali LaForce in the interview on the field after the game, there was a comparison to the New England Patriots.
Yeah, that was funny. I caught it right away.
Yeah, and I was like, man, this is pretty terrifying that a team full of future pros is taking a New England Patriots approach to preparing for football games. But a proven approach, certainly, sure. In terms of it. Jonathan Allen's star really exploding. You know, the fantastic Superman sack, as I think it was either Keith Ford or Travion Williams tried to get him on a chip.
It was Travion Williams.
Oh, my gosh. Poor Travion. He's going to be part of that highlight forever.
He actually had disposed of the left guard, and that is the true freshman.
I mean, right.
Last year he's playing high school. It's a little easier. I don't nothing's easy in the SEC. But, you know, true freshman at tackle, at least you can help with a chip tight end or a running back there. When you're at guard and you have Jonathan Allen over you, you know, the center can't turn your way every time. And
yeah.
That was tough. Now, here's what I will say about Jonathan Allen. He deserves all the praise he's receiving, maybe that he should have received for the last couple of years. I mean, he's playing to a very high level. But in this particular game, this was a total mismatch. If I was a scout, I wouldn't even watch this. There would be only one thing I would watch about this game with Jonathan Allen is just how hard he plays no matter what and his athletic ability to dive over that guy and make that play.
Right.
I mean, that's magnificent. How many tackles and how he manhandled that guard doesn't mean a thing. The game coming up this week, in 2 weeks, put that tape on because that'll be a good battle.
Okay, we have plenty of Alabama time to talk, so we're going to keep it moving. But real quickly, Eddie Jackson out for the season. Obviously, just a real bummer for Eddie Jackson, the player who is so much fun to watch every single time he's got the ball in the open field. Do you think it is a bigger loss for Alabama in special teams or in the secondary?
Well, I think in the secondary, and I'll tell you why. I don't really know what they're going to do. What made them unique is that Eddie Jackson had corner skills to play safety. Now, Ronnie Harrison, the other starting safety, you know, really doesn't have that type of cover skills. Hootie Jones, who comes in as the other safety in nickel situations, I don't think he does either, and he's not as good a hitter. I would not be shocked if they don't move either Minka Fitzpatrick or Marlon Humphrey to that safety position, because I think their next best player is Anthony Avant, their corner. And here's the thing about playing corner, and Nick Saban told me this, so, you know, whatever it's worth, it came from Nick. A corner might have 5, 6, or 7 plays where he's going to be tested, and in the outcome of how he's tested, it's huge. I mean, those 6, 7 plays could be 3 touchdowns. But a safety is involved in 65 plays. He's got a run fit. He has to cover up in coverage and in zone. He has to fit the lanes. So I think he's going to want one of his most dependable players to take over that spot. And it would not shock me that he says, you know what, I can live with Avant on the corner. I can live with number 5, can't remember his name right now, as an extra corner. But I got to keep a playmaker at safety, so keep a heads out for that.
Mm. All right, Gary, we will keep an eye on that. We will keep our minds and our stomachs on Blue Apron, because for less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, some wild-caught Alaskan salmon, maybe it is heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron is bringing you the absolute best. You can check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping. Free $99. 3 meals free, free shipping, and you do it by going to blueapron.com/SEC. You'll love how good it feels. You'll love how good it tastes when you are creating these incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't you wait. That's blueapron.com/SEC. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, as we turn our attention to Florida, Georgia, as of course Gary just said, we've got a Georgia team coming back from a bye, and the week before, just a gut punch of a loss. When you are a Georgia team, especially one with Jim Chaney and Sam Pittman, and a Georgia team that has been used to running the ball, to lose a game by getting stopped on fourth and short, it was striking. It really took me off guard. What are you expecting from this Georgia team that is 2-3 in league play? But man, like, the sky's not falling. There's still a lot of things that Georgia can do left in the season, and a schedule that seems to be favorable for them to finish strong if they're in the right headspace.
It is. I know the sky's not falling, but this is a team that should still be playing for the SEC East Championship. They should have beaten Tennessee. That was a self-inflicted loss in that football game. You know, they should have beaten Vanderbilt. So, I think that they – I don't know if they needed the bye – everybody says they need the bye week physically, but I think Georgia needed it mentally too. That, you know, what could have been will haunt them in this season, because the East is there for the taking.
Yep.
And, Florida hasn't beaten anybody, and Georgia has shown that they're willing to play to the level of their competition, and they make mistakes. They make a lot of mistakes. On our first podcast, Chip, I told you that I had quite big question marks about Georgia. They don't have game breakers at wide receiver. They're small at wide receiver. They've been injured at running back. They got a true freshman quarterback. Their secondary is average, to say the least. You know, I mean, Maurice Smith comes in from Alabama and takes a spot, and their linebackers, their two outside linebackers are in the NFL, and they replaced them with average football players. Not bad, just average SEC football. They don't have the edge rushers that Florida or Ole Miss or Alabama or A&M or Arkansas or even Missouri has. They've just got football players. So I had questions about them, but I think they're going to get a favorable matchup in Florida. The Florida offense should not stress them. Kirby, I think, will have their defense good enough to make this a low-scoring game. And when you have the gunslinger Eason at quarterback, and you only need, you know, maybe 17 to 24 points to win this football game, I think they're feeling good about the matchup. On the other hand, Florida comes into the game feeling that they can shut Georgia out. They can shut them out. That's what they believe.
You've got
That's what Florida believes. I don't know if I believe that, but I think Florida comes into this game thinking, we can pitch a shutout. If we have to win this thing 10-6, we'll win it 10-6.
Jacob Eason going up against a fantastic Florida secondary. Now, I still have some questions about Florida up front, in the front seven, particularly with the loss of Davis to injury.
Yep.
You know, just a fantastic player there. But on the back end, where you've got players like Nick Washington, Quincy Wilson, and of course Jalen Tease Tabor, as he's going by
and
these
Marcus
days.
Marcus May too.
Yep. I mean, just a really great Gators secondary. That matchup, I think, is a fantastic one for watching great defensive backs play, because I think Eason will let it go. But I also don't see Eason being able to have too much success against that group.
Well, I think Georgia and Jim Chaney, their offensive coordinator, will not attack them the way a lot of teams attack them. I could see a lot of play-action passes with the fullback slipping out, the two tight ends, Nata and Blazevic, doing damage. Play-action passes against their safeties. I think that they would be happy to put their wide receivers out there and say, okay, let's play 9-on-9.
God, that is a very Georgia way to play. It's a very
Correct.
Georgia way to win.
And remember, when they play man-to-man coverage, when you bring your safeties into block, if your wide receiver blocks a safety, he's actually blocking two guys, because the corner for Florida's following them in there. So I think you're going to see a lot of 2-3 tight end formations, a lot of little bootlegs. I don't think you're going to see them try to attack the teeth of the Florida defense, which is their corners in the secondary. I think what you pointed out is they're going to be without what a lot of coaches believe is the best linebacker in the SEC, Jared Davis. I know coaches that have put his highlight tape of 30 or 40 plays on and showed their team how to play football,
wow,
how to play linebacker,
wow,
other opposing teams. So I think they're going to try to stress that front seven the way you said. Bring in, instead of having an extra defensive back, force them to bring in an extra linebacker and see if they can stress that front seven. I think that's the way Georgia will want to play them.
On the other side, we've got a Florida offense. It gets Luke Del Rio back in the lineup, but you know, Del Rio is in a position, Gary, where I feel like he could be a game manager, and I've seen some Florida writers and reporters discuss trying to have him be more game manager than gunslinger, but I think in order for that to happen, there's got to be a running back to emerge from that committee that has been splitting the snaps. How do you see this Florida offense being built as it's getting a little bit healthier, but still definitely evolving, and really waiting on Antonio Callaway to be the superstar that a lot of people were looking for coming into the season?
Right. I think the stress for this Florida team is they really only have one receiver that anyone is even halfway nervous about, Antonio Callaway. And if there's anybody in this league that is good of taking away a guy, Kirby Smart has learned it from the best, Nick
yeah.
Saban, how to do that. So that I think if Florida is going to be a factor in this game, they're going to have to get the players like Brandon Powell and Amoff Fullwood. There are other receivers involved a little bit, because if they just try to go to Callaway, I just don't know if that's going to happen. Now, when Doug Nussmeier and Jim McElwain, the offensive coordinator and the creator of the offense, get together, I still think they're going to say, I don't think they can beat us if we don't beat ourselves. I mean, I'm not going to let Luke Del Rio throw three interceptions again, because I don't know if Georgia can score on us. I think that's how they go into the game feeling, and all we got to do is make some first downs. If we punt the ball a little bit, we punt the ball a little bit. This, even though it's a neutral site, this is about 70-30 a Georgia fan base. I've done 10 of them, okay? And it's usually
right.
And the crowd base that gets frustrated the most is the Georgia fans if things aren't going well, because the Florida fans, there's not as many of them. So I think they play long ball type, look into the horizon and say, we only might need two plays in this game, and we can go from there.
That's was it a couple seasons ago, the 9-6 game that Jarvis Jones maybe sealed with
yep.
an interception?
Yeah, well, I thought it was higher scoring than that, to tell you the truth. I thought it was Jarvis Jones knocked it out of the tight end's hands,
oh,
but I'm not sure. They
yeah.
all run together for me, too,
yeah.
I have to say.
it sounds like a Florida-Georgia game right out of the box, as advertised. A lot of punts. Good workout
okay.
for the punters.
Yep.
All right. As we look at a team on the rise, the Auburn Tigers bounced back, rejuvenated from their bye week, 56-3 winners against Arkansas, 543 rushing yards in the game, and Auburn was down a running back going in. Now,
yep.
Gary, I'm willing to attribute some of this to Arkansas being in its eighth game in as many weeks, feeling the impact of the SEC grind. I would like to attribute some of this to also Auburn's defensive front doing a good job of setting the tone when they were out on the field. But are you buying into Auburn just getting hot with this offense? You know, it's almost like a basketball. Like, it seems like all their three-pointers
right.
are falling right now. Do you see them being able to continue this and going on a little run here in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I do. I mean, they've got a challenge here now. I will say that, you know, after they come back, after Auburn plays this one, then they've got, you know, these two games here. Ole Miss is next, right? I believe for them.
It is. It's Ole Miss
Auburn.
In Oxford.
I know. All yeah. Ole Miss and in the game. You know, that's going to be a tough one, because Ole Miss is hurt. They got embarrassed, you know, and there's a lot of people questioning what Ole Miss is all about. And now, you know, will the real Ole Miss team stand up for this? I attribute a lot of that game to what you said. I mean, you had Auburn coming off a bye and Arkansas coming off of, you know, Ole Miss and Alabama.
Yeah. That's
you know,
a lot.
And
That's
they're not a,
lot.
A great defensive team anyway. And when you start chasing your tail against that Auburn offense, it's like playing a wishbone offense. It can embarrass you. But no matter what, they did embarrass them. And, you know, that ship has been riding. The shocking thing for me is not their defense. I figured they'd be pretty good on defense this year. They got some pretty, you know, good offense, defensive football players, especially in the line. I'm really surprised that the offense has been able to crank it up like this with Sean White at quarterback. I told basically everyone all offseason that if Auburn didn't have a running quarterback, their offense wouldn't work. Now, you know, I've said that in so many words to Gus Malzahn in a form of a question, saying, will it work without Cam? You know, will it work without that type of a quarterback, Nick Marshall? And he said, yes, it'd just look a little different. And I go, well, I haven't seen it work. And it's working this year. So I give him all the credit in the world, Rhett Lashley, his offensive coordinator. But I'm going to take half of it and say, you know, you had a team, Arkansas team, that was played the two physical football team games right in front of them. Ole Miss and Arkansas is a huge physical game, and then Alabama. And they were totally out of gas. And then you play a team that it's not quite like the style that everybody plays. And then Arkansas got embarrassed. That was an embarrassing game for them.
This game against Hugh Freeze, and you know, also with the familiarity of Hugh Freeze and Gus Malzahn, and the kinship that a lot of these coaches who have all come into the league in about the same 2 to 3 year window, you know, it's in the SEC West, and they're all playing each other. They all have their own different version of the rivalry. Man, this is a really interesting spot for this Ole Miss team that again is coming off the loss and expected to get up and like you said, stand up. You know, are they going to be able to be that team? Are you expecting to see it on Saturday?
It'll be a lost season for Ole Miss if they don't lose this game. I mean, it's already a lost potential championship that they could have been in the middle. I mean, come on, they're 21 points ahead of Alabama. They're what, same type of lead against Florida State. I mean, this is a team that, you know, at one point thought they were one of the top five teams in the country. And now, you know, they're staring at four losses. And, you know, that's going to be tough for them to take, you know, and it's not done for them. You know, they still got a lot of big games ahead of them. So I'm not sure. This is a total cop-out, but I'll tell you what, if Auburn beats them, they might run all the way into that Alabama game with something riding really big on that game. The winner of that game, if Auburn doesn't lose, the winner of that game is going to go to Atlanta.
Yep.
You might make the argument that they can't get in the national championship. Some people will, some people won't. But Alabama will feel all the pressure because I don't know if Auburn loses if they win this game. You just don't know if they will.
I think that this is a fantastic spot to look. You mentioned the Auburn defensive line is just filled with fantastic.
Adam, Carl Lawson, they've got good football players
but
there.
This will be a great time to see Carlton Davis, the cornerback, be tested in a way in the back half of that Auburn defense as well. I'm with you.
And Ole Miss is decimated in the back half. And if you don't know how to fit in the secondary with your linebackers and safety, if you don't have a lot of veteran players in the secondary that can fit the matchups and the unbalanced lines and the quick motions, you can get outflanked in an instant. And all of a sudden, you're playing good football, and it's like flag football. The guy runs by you and go, what did we do wrong? You just one guy in the secondary with the wrong fit, and it's over.
Too much evidence of that for Ole Miss fans coming from Leonard Fournette and LSU last weekend. Just a tremendous return for Fournette. And again, we will continue to talk about LSU, and that game will be the topic of next week's conversation. But, Gary, before we let you go, any major takeaways or thoughts about where LSU is now with another win on interim coach Ed Orgeron's record?
Yes. My theme all along for about 3 years now has been that LSU only needed competent quarterback play. They didn't need superstar quarterback play. They needed a quarterback that handed the ball off properly, pitched it, check with me, get him into the right play, hit the swing pass, hit the screen pass, hit the fullback in the flat, throw the check down to the tight end. When the receiver runs a slant, put it in front of him, not behind him.
Mm.
They don't need the back shoulder throw or the comeback throw or the scrambling quarterback that makes everybody miss and has the highlight film. They don't need the highlight film plays from their quarterback. They need the mundane, boring plays, and they could be legit. And you're right. We don't need any open for LSU-Alabama. LSU got humiliated by them a year ago. They'll be ready to play.
Goodness gracious. Give me the 3rd-and-5 completion. That's all you need.
That's exactly right. Or punt it.
Throwing away is not bad. You don't turn the ball over. Gary, thank you so much. We appreciate it, as always. We'll catch up with you next week for Alabama and LSU. Enjoy Florida, Georgia, and that party in Jacksonville.